Richard Hoagland, of course we have to go back to the moon, but why don't we just jump ahead and go straight to Mars?
Well, as Rick's going to point out, we actually could do that. When this new policy was hammered out between Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld and a whole bunch of other people in, again, secret meetings and presented by the president in January 2004, a number of people wanted to go directly to the moon, or to Mars. They basically, you know, I mean, you had one guy on the show, Mr. Zubrin, Bob Zubrin.
Bob Zubrin, right.
And we're very unhappy about going to the moon. The problem is that with the risk-averse NASA, where you're not going to take big leaps, what they want to do is use the moon as a test bed to kind of test out all the stuff before you go off to Mars. And, of course, this now brings in my perspective, which is that this the backdrop to this entire conversation is missing a crucial set of data points, which is the moon and Mars are nothing like NASA has been presenting to the American people for the last 30 years. You know, I'm about to come out with some astonishing data, really amazing data, which everybody can verify because it's on the web now. It's on official NASA websites. The guys inside, the real folks, are leaking this like a sieve so that the people will get what they've been kept from getting for 30-plus years. And there's extraordinary things to be found on the moon, extraordinary surprises, which we don't even have to wait for the vision to give us. The first new opportunity will be in 2008 with this unmanned Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which is a spacecraft loaded with a very exquisite camera in a close orbit around the moon. And if we point it at the right things, you're going to see astonishing glass structures and cities and buildings and all the stuff I've been saying is there for years and years and years. It's there, folks. It's there. And the book I'm coming out with will show it to you in spades.
And you've got the backing of Ingo Swann, too. He says it's
well,
there.
He said it from his remote viewing decades ago, but obviously you can't take that to the bank. But you can take NASA photographs that you can actually verify, that have a source code that you can go and look at on the web. I believe, and you know, David may fight me on this, Rick maybe less so, but I believe that the reason that it's taking us twice as long to go back to the moon now as it did when we didn't know what we were doing back when Kennedy said, let's go do it, is because NASA knows exactly what's there, the folks at the top, and the White House as well, and this is a false front Western town. We do not intend to go back. We do not intend for the program to succeed. We actually, when I say we, those at the top, want it to fail. They want it to look as if they're trying their best, but it actually is not going to work. And David can give you now some very important specifics about what NASA is planning and how even the rank-and-file mainstream rocket engineers that he talks to every day, without knowing the hidden agenda that I talk about, are looking at this plan and scratching their heads and saying, what is wrong with these people? It isn't going to work. And they can't obviously figure the next part, which is somebody doesn't want it to work. David?
Well, the plan that NASA has to go back to the moon involves making hardware, which are spinoffs of the shuttle. So, you know, for the sake of brevity and being fairly simple, they have a smaller Ares-1 rocket and then a bigger stack Ares-5 rocket, which most say is not doesn't have sufficient propulsion to lift the mass that they need to take to the moon. And this is coming from lots and lots of different engineers. Even former astronaut John Young has made comments about this. This is not a secret that there are real, genuine concerns that the architecture for going back to the moon is just simply inadequate. And this has given rise to lots of engineers who really design rocket engines and rockets all the time in the contractors and in NASA and in other programs to come up with alternative ways of taking the existing shuttle hardware and turning it into a method to take us back to the moon. One that Rick can talk about is Direct-2. There are others called MAX and others. But, you know, as long as Congress is cheapening out on the purse strings here and not giving NASA an adequate amount of money to really do the job right, and we have to sort of take from Peter to pay Paul
right
in developing, you know, spin-off type of architecture from the existing, we're looking at how do you, you know, create the rocket? How do you do this to be the most efficient, the most effective, and to get the job done the quickest? And when you said before the break, why don't we pool resources? Why don't we do this and that? Well, we've got a law called ITAR, which is actually the acronym for the International Traffic in Arms Regulation, Title 22, Chapter 1, Subchapter M. And this law prevents an American anything, company, individual, government employee, no matter where in the world you may be located, from sharing technology with a non-American, including our allies.
Well, aren't we doing that with the ISS, David?
If it is approved technology or in the public domain, or it goes through the permission process, it can be shared. But it is lengthy, it is timely, it is costly as can be. Big companies like Boeing and Lockheed have departments of lawyers that deal with ITAR. SpaceDev, a great small entrepreneurial rocket company managed by Jim Benson, who's been on this show in San Diego, did a merger with a rocket company in England, our ally, about 5 years ago. ITAR forced the reversal of that measure, of that merger. He could not talk with his counterparts, even American citizens, in England because of the ITAR law. And so this is run by State Department. It is really a huge barrier issue that needs some attention, some modification.
Absolutely. If we're not going to put the money into the program, then we should at least share the resources.
Well, you know, if you're even a spacesuit is on the ITAR list of forbidden topics. I have professor friends at the University of North Dakota who are also living and have dual citizenship and residency with other countries, and they have a real issue about doing spacesuit research at lower cost locations in other countries because the spacesuit is on the ITAR list, and nobody can afford to go through ITAR registration on a lot of these different items. But what's happened is this whole process, this mechanism, Ares 1, Ares 5, going with the CEV, going to Orion, all this mechanism that we hear every day and nobody can even keep it straight. There are people out there who are saying this is just not going to work. We're taking it in our own hands. One of the more voiceful programs, and Rick is helping to take it directly into the hands of Congress, is the Direct To program. And I'll just let Rick talk about it, because this is amazing that people are trying to do an end run to get real good economic producing rocket hardware to take us back to the moon cheaper and a lot faster.
All right, Rick, Direct Two.
Direct Two is an excellent alternative architecture to go to the moon and Mars. I'm going to read you a couple things here that's similar to what I read on Dr. Livingston's program, which will introduce the public to what Direct Two is. Let's talk about what NASA wants to do. NASA wants to launch the Ares, which is one large solid rocket booster with an upper stage. As John Young has said, the astronaut, it has serious problems. It costs too much. It's underpowered. They keep reducing, attempting to reduce the weight of the CEV because the rocket is so underpowered. Well, Directed presents a completely different architecture that's much more effective, much more, actually cheaper. You can get to the moon faster and get to Mars faster. And it uses basically the same architecture that we have now with the space transportation system, the shuttle. I'm going to read a couple things here. This is from the introduction on the directlauncher.com, which is the website, www.directlauncher.com, in case the public wants to go to it. This is from the introduction, Direct Space Transportation Derivative Version 2. Direct is an alternative approach to launching missions planned under NASA's new mandate, the Vision for Space Exploration. Direct would replace the separate Ares 1 crew launch vehicle, CLV, and the Ares 5 cargo launch vehicle, CALV, with one single Jupiter launcher, capable of performing both roles. This architecture completely removes the cost and risk associated with developing and operating a second launcher system, saving NASA $19 billion in development costs and a further $16 billion in operational costs over the next 20 years. That's a minimum figure, George, $35 billion. It could be actually much, much larger than that.
Yeah, and it would probably double.
Probably, could be. And you can do a lot with $50 or $60 billion. Direct single launcher system would use existing space transportation, aka the space shuttle facilities, and hardware to lift over 48 tons in basic configuration. I might mention that 48 tons is actually much, much more powerful in the sense of payload lifting capacity than the space shuttle or any other present U.S. Booster system. And the second version, which would lift up to 108 tons with an upper stage. This approach introduces many key benefits, such as optimum use of existing NASA and contractor experience base, equipment, development cost, upgrade paths, early return to the moon, and shorter gap after the shuttle retires over the current Ares launch vehicles. I think it's very important because another thing we have to remember, when NASA retires the shuttle in 2010, they're going to put thousands of people out of work who were originally working on the shuttle. This system will maintain the vast majority of those people. Now, people say, you know, we don't want NASA to become a job struggle, but we don't want to have to put thousands of people out of work that can get us to the moon and Mars either. This would be an effective, important use of maintaining those jobs.
And they have the knowledge. They know how to do this.
Obviously, and we're going to lose that expertise if we don't maintain all those employees at NASA, whether it be at the Kennedy Space Center, Johnson Space Center, you know, whatever facilities are going to build this.